budget. Buying 300 square feet of a material that is 333% more expensive than the cheaper alternative will add up big time. Due to the fact we are only buying a small amount of the material, we can get away with buying the nicer stuff for only $126 more. Makes sense, right? The difference in the appearance of the finished product you'll get from a bathroom remodeled with top-of-the-line materials is night and day compared to using the cheapest stuff possible. But the overall increase in price is very nominal. Because bathrooms are usually smaller spaces, they are frequently eligible for upgrade hack opportunities. As a general rule, whenever you find the amount of material you need is a small amount, consider an upgrade hack as a possibility. This is especially true when you're using a durable material you won't need to replace anytime soon. In addition to floors and bathrooms, showers can be a great place to upgrade hack. When you're replacing a shower, you'll typically have three options: a shower insert, builder-grade sheets, or tile. When choosing which option will be best for you, you'll need to consider the area your rental is in, the ARVs of surrounding properties, and the rent discrepancy between the high and low rents. We'll talk more about why that matters later, but for now, I want to point out that your best upgrade hack opportunities will come when you're able to justify tiling a shower. Much like the bathroom floor option, a shower has numbers that look similar. Showers have small surface areas and therefore are great candidates for using better materials. They also make a great impression when done well, and renters and buyers alike will enjoy the upgrade if you're intending to flip. Bathrooms are a big bang for your buck category when it comes to the impact they make on the value of a property. If the area you're in supports upgrading your shower, consider doing a tile shower that feels modern if possible. Of course, this would only be the case if you need to do a shower anyway. It wouldn't make sense to tear out a perfectly fine shower just to tile one. But if you have to replace it, you have a great upgrade hack opportunity. In the majority of houses I buy, the bathrooms are so outdated and in such terrible condition, I would need to redo them just to have something I could even rent out. Consider that the tile for a shower, like the bathroom floor, is also going to cover a small surface area. Since you won't be buying much material, consider getting something that is high-end to make an impression and also increase your ARV. Your demo cost and labor cost will be fixed, but material costs will vary, and investing in these small spaces create the opportunity to increase the value of your property. While using expensive tile for small areas can pay off, don't go overboard with the bathroom details if they won't add value. If you want to install a rainfall shower head, consider the consequences: repairs for an item that isn't needed, or unnecessary spending for something in low-end rentals. Also, consider the work already being done in the rehab. The thing that makes adding a rainfall shower head affordable is if you already have to rip out the existing shower and expose the plumbing. The rainfall shower head itself can be bought for under $200. The additional plumbing and valve you need can be purchased and installed for under $200 as well. For less than $400, you can add a luxurious item like a rainfall shower head, as long as you're tearing out the existing shower and exposing the plumbing in a way that makes it easy for your contractor to put in. The last area I look to upgrade hack in a bathroom is the sink or vanity area. If you already need to replace it, consider spending a couple hundred dollars more and getting a vanity with a granite countertop and upgraded faucet. For a couple hundred bucks, you can get much more durable materials and a big wow factor, assuming those items needed replacing. Kitchen. The kitchen is the next place I look to upgrade hack. This is because it is another area that is highly likely to need many renovations, or a total gut job, during a BRRRR remodel. Kitchens are the biggest bang for your buck area of a property. With this being the case, you are statistically more likely to be doing rehab work in your kitchen, leading to more opportunities for upgrade hacks. One way to accomplish a quick and easy upgrade hack in the kitchen is to purchase stainless steel appliances instead of standard white appliances in situations where the appliances need to be replaced anyway. Appliances aren't cheap, and replacing perfectly fine and operational appliances with newer, nicer, fancier ones is usually a bad use of money in a rental property. However, if the appliances need to be replaced anyway, the only extra money you're spending is the difference in price between standard and stainless steel. It typically costs a few hundred dollars more to replace your appliances with stainless steel versions. Pretty sweet price to pay to get an updated kitchen. Another way to hack your kitchen remodel is to use granite countertops instead of tile or laminate versions in situations where you need to replace them anyway. I've bought and seen homes before where the countertop is in such bad condition that it literally can be lifted off the cabinets where it rests, and if someone leaned against it, it would shift. When this is the case, it often leads to water damage of the cabinetry underneath. As the wood cabinets rot, the countertop won't sit evenly on them anymore. This leads to cabinet repair or replacement and the need for a new countertop as well. If you're already replacing the countertops, look at the price difference between granite and other options. In the last 5 years or so, I've seen a huge decrease in the price for granite slabs that are used in kitchens. If your contractor has an employee or sub that can install the granite for a reasonable price, you just may have yourself a money-saving hack. Granite is much more durable than other options and difficult for tenants to wear down or break. The big thing to look out for here is the price of the labor to install them. If you can get the part squared away, you can accomplish this hack pretty easily. If you're going to be replacing the countertops, you'll probably want to replace the backsplash as well, or add one if you don't have one. Look at pictures of kitchens with and without a backsplash. It makes a big difference. If you're trying to avoid spending big money on your backsplash, ask the person installing the countertops to use the extra countertop granite to make the backsplash with. You most likely won't have to purchase anything new, and the only extra cost will be the labor involved. If the employee was well-priced for installing your granite, they'll likely be well-priced for installing the backsplash too. Miscellaneous items. Dry rot is a form of fungus that damages wood, usually on the exterior of the house. When wood gets wet, this fungus can grow and start eating through the wood. Signs of dry rot are clear when the wood appears rotted to the eye or soft and mushy to the touch. If left uncorrected, the fungus will eventually destroy the wood completely and lead to a costly replacement. If large parts of your property are affected by it, you may end up buying tons of lumber, then paying for paint and labor to have all your rotted wood replaced. Extremely expensive. When you need to have something painted, ask the painter if they are capable of repairing dry rot. If they are, you have a great opportunity to save some money. Dry rot can be nipped in the bud if you are able to cut out the affected wood and either replace it with wood filler or smaller pieces of wood connected together. If you don't catch it in time, the entirety of the wood will rot. If you do, you can fix it for a small fraction of the cost. Knowing that dry rot will continually take money from you the longer it exists, you can save yourself a lot of money by catching it in its infancy. When landscaping, consider using items that won't likely ever need to be replaced. Pouring concrete is more expensive than putting down sod, but it's very difficult to mess up concrete. Sod can die pretty easily, and your tenants aren't likely to take as good of care of it as you would. Using mulch can be another great hack, particularly because it's so cheap. Mulch can be bought for a couple of dollars a bag and can be replaced with every vacancy for a very low amount of money. If you put in a yard that relies on a complicated sprinkler system, you are adding more things that can break and unnecessarily increasing your repair costs. If you buy a property with carpet that needs to be replaced, this will happen often, trust me, consider replacing it with a very tough and durable laminate instead of more carpet. Carpet is the cheapest option, but it's also the least durable and easiest to be ruined. You are almost guaranteed you'll be replacing it with every new tenant, or at least every other new tenant. While laminate is more expensive at first, it will save you lots of money in the long run. In addition to that, your house will likely appraise for more because of it. This gives you multiple benefits, which is the spirit of upgrade hacking. Why upgrade hacking fits well with the Burr model. The point of upgrade hacking is to find fixed costs, things that you had to do anyway, and add value through creating work with your variable costs, using better materials, adding simple upgrades, etc. Knowing this, I've discovered that upgrade hacking is most efficient when significant work already needed to be done. It's very hard to work this angle on turnkey properties, those that don't need any work other than to turn the key and open the door, because you have no fixed costs. If you're buying properties in good condition, there is no reason to upgrade hack. Upgrade hacking works best on properties that need lots of work. The more you will be ripping out, reconfiguring, or replacing, the more opportunities you'll have to upgrade hack. This fits so well with the Burr model because Burr properties typically need significant work. We target rundown properties when we Burr because we want to add value before pulling our money out. Statistically speaking, we are way more likely to be doing big rehabs on Burr properties because that was our play to add value in the first place. Remember, we want to be buying houses in such bad shape they likely won't even qualify for a loan. That means the houses will be in seriously bad shape. Of course, this won't be every deal, but it will be a lot of them. Knowing this is the case, we need to build a specific skill set that will enable us to be good in the areas that are the most significant. The two most important skills you can develop are finding deals and fixing up deals. Much like a professional athlete trains the most to improve skills that will help the team win, why pitchers are usually terrible at batting, we want to apply this same philosophy to our business. So if we know the Burr model gives us a mathematically higher likelihood of doing lots of rehab work, and we know the upgrade hacking model is more successful in projects with a lot of rehab work, it would make sense that the two strategies would fit hand in hand. There is a synergistic quality to pairing both strategies. Because I've done so many Burr projects, I've created the concept of upgrade hacking as a way to get more value out of my deals that make me a better investor in the process. Remember earlier in the book when I mentioned the goal of Burr is to spend as little money as possible to purchase a property, then improve its ARV as much as possible? The difference between those two numbers is where our value is created. And the more value we create, the more money we get back out of the deal. This is the whole purpose of Burr. Well, upgrade hacking is designed to make your property worth more without spending significantly more. It's a system created by looking for inefficiencies in your rehab and trying to root them out. To me, upgrade hacking is the equivalent of what fast food restaurants do with their combo meals, without being terrible for you, of course. If you were already planning on buying a burger and a soda, you can add on fries for an additional 50 cents if you do the combo. Normally, the fries would cost $3 on their own, and you'd never buy them. But if you are buying the burger and soda anyway, and are already committed to it, paying an extra 50 cents for fries isn't a bad use of money. Of course, comparing fast food to real estate can be a bit of a stretch, but the concept is the same. If you're already paying the fixed costs for a project, labor, and the fixed costs make up the majority of your project's budget, why not spend an incremental amount more to get way more value? If the point of Burr is to push your ARV up as much as possible by spending as little as possible, it only makes sense to do this. Black belt investors don't take the lazy road. They don't go with the cheapest options just because it's the cheapest option. They go with the best option. And they use their intelligence, experience, and creativity to decide what that option will be. This is our goal. And this is why we study real estate, so we can make the best choice and build our wealth the fastest. Key points. A rockstar contractor is a must-have. Use leverage to amplify your results. Who on your team can help you with the things you need done? Make top priorities your top priority. Don't waste time on unimportant tasks. Memorize how talent acts and what it looks like. Find team members for your core four that also invest. Bring value in relationships first. Use itemized bids with contractors for an apples-to-apples comparison. Memorize and practice common rehab hacks. Use investor-friendly contractors. Spend the bulk of your rehab budget on the kitchen and bathrooms when possible. Chapter 5. Common Rehab Strategies. Art is pattern informed by sensibility. Herbert Reed. As you continually purchase fixer-upper rental properties, you'll start to recognize patterns in your rehab that end up being repeated time and time again. The better you get at recognizing these patterns, the more successful your rehabs will become and the less stress you'll feel each time. This is the way our brains work, and it's the science behind why experience leads to success. The more we experience something, the more opportunities our brains have to recognize patterns and make adjustments to improve our performance. As you continue to grow as an investor, you'll start to recognize these patterns as well. In this chapter, we are going to cover some of the more common rehab strategies to add value to your properties. My hope is that as you begin to notice the patterns in your rehabs, you'll take that same skill and apply it to the other parts of BRRRR. Learning to find these patterns of success at every level is how you'll become a black belt investor. Adding square footage to increase your property's value. One of the very best ways to add value to your property is to make it more desirable, as you know. But one of the best ways to make your property more valuable is to add square footage to a property that is smaller than ideal. This works especially well when your property has less square footage than the average surrounding properties. By adding more square feet, you make it easier for the appraiser to give more value to your property because you made it comparable to surrounding properties. You also make it more desirable to tenants looking to move to the area who know what the other houses look like, how big they are, and how much space their desired rent will get them. If this is an option for you, consider looking for the parts of the addition that are already in place. For example, it may cost $30,000 to build an entire new master bedroom. However, if you find a property that already has a concrete pad poured, has an overhang, roof extension, has electrical run to it, outdoor patio fan, or is very close to indoor plumbing, you can likely make this part of the square footage of your property for very little extra money. Check with your contractor to find out what the rules are in your area first. Once you know them, ask them how much it would cost to make this addition part of the square footage of your property. Sometimes this involves running HVAC to the space. Other times it means having both plumbing and electrical run. Whatever hoops you may have to jump through, if you can find a way to spend $5,000 to $10,000 to add additional square feet, you can often improve your property's ARV an additional $10,000 to $40,000. I actively look to do this on every single BRRRR property I buy, and it allows me to grow my wealth much, much faster. Why does this work? It's because of the way appraisers value property. While not the same in every market, most of the time, appraisers are taking the square footage of a property, multiplying it by the price per square foot of comparable properties, and then adjusting that number based on varying amenities. If I know an appraiser is going to start with two numbers, the price per square foot and the total square feet, wouldn't it make sense for me to do everything I can to pump both those numbers up? I can only improve the price per square foot by making my property more similar to surrounding properties. This is typically done in the rehab process and is affected by the materials I choose. I can only improve the square footage of the home by adding square feet. Additionally, this only brings value if your property is less than or at least equal to the surrounding properties regarding its size. If you already have the biggest house in the area, making it bigger won't make it worth more. What we want to do is look for properties that are unusually small and make them bigger. This is where we get the most bang for our buck. Understanding how appraisers work makes this possible. If we do this right, I find that the price to build new square footage is usually less than the added value that square footage provides. This is especially true if it's an upgrade hack and I can build onto the property without having to do it from scratch, already has a roof, foundation, etc. If you talk with your contractor and find that the price to build is less than the value that square footage brings, look deeper into seeing if this is an option for you. Adding bedrooms and bathrooms. Another way to add value to your property is increase the number of bedrooms or bathrooms it has. Homes built with less than three bedrooms won't meet the needs of a growing family the same way a home with three or four bedrooms can. Many older homes were built with two bedrooms and one bathroom. This was acceptable for the time in which they were built, but it makes the property worth much less than what it could be worth if some changes were made to make the property more suitable for a larger family. If a house has less than three bedrooms, you can increase its value significantly, in most cases, by adding more bedrooms to it. While you can add value by adding bedrooms, keep in mind there is a point of diminishing returns. The biggest value jump is from two to three bedrooms, as there are more people looking for three-bedroom homes than two-bedroom homes. The next biggest is from three to four, and so on. While every market is different, the general rule applies that adding bedrooms to smaller homes will almost always increase their value. A great upgrade hack is to take an area of the house that isn't providing much value and convert that into a bedroom. In most cases, all you need to pay for is some drywall, a closet, and possibly some French doors. This is an extremely cheap way to add a large amount of value to a property. An easy way to do this is to look for a two-bedroom home with over 1,100 square feet. If you find a home this size with only two bedrooms, there is a very good chance it has a space inside that could be converted to an additional bedroom without spending money to add on to the property. You want to look for spaces like dining rooms, dens, offices, utility rooms, or living rooms that are not being used to their full potential. Once you find them, look to see if there is sufficient space to build a closet, put up drywall, and add a door. If there is, you just likely bumped up your ARV significantly for just a few thousand dollars of work. This works because of a concept in real estate called functional obsolescence. Functional obsolescence is a term used to describe when a design feature of a property is so out of date or undesirable that it renders the property, or at least that section of the property, useless. Improving efficiencies are what we look to do to add value to properties. A common one is a two-bedroom home. If you can add a third bedroom or a fourth bedroom to a three-bedroom home, you can make the property more desirable to a large number of families, making your property worth more in the process. This same concept works for homes with one bathroom. Would you want to live in a one-bathroom property? That sounds horrible for anyone living with more than one person, although I know a lot of people do this. Adding a second bathroom to a configuration like this can add quite a bit of value to the property and make it much easier to rent out. While we want to make a property worth as much as we can, we don't want to overspend to accomplish that. Remember that when homes were built a long time ago, they were intended as starter homes for new families. As soon as a family had a need for a third bedroom, they would move to another property and sell the one they were in. This would create an available house for a new family looking for a starter home, and the cycle would continue. The problem is, families today are getting started before couples are buying houses. With today's generation valuing home ownership much less than they did before, many millennials aren't buying homes until they already have several children. The same pattern is reflected in renting homes. Most people start with apartments and don't leave the apartment for a rental home until they need three bedrooms. This means you aren't going to find many tenants looking for two-bedroom properties, so there isn't much reason for you to own one. This is why we look for opportunities to hack whenever possible. We do want to add value to our properties. We just don't want to pay top dollar to do so. Whenever I'm looking at new properties, the first thing I look for is where I can add square footage and where I can add a bedroom or a bathroom, assuming it needs this. Quite simply, this is the fastest way to skyrocket your property's ARV and receive the highest return on your money. When you take a starter home and turn it into a forever home, you increase its value by a significant amount. This helps on your ARV and ultimately your refinance. It also means you'll get much more rent for the property and your tenants won't have to move out as often. Having a tenant start off needing two bedrooms and then having one more child is virtually a guarantee they'll be moving out and into a bigger place. From several angles, it makes the most sense to add a third bedroom or a second bathroom whenever possible. Adding value through strategic remodeling. When undertaking any kind of significant remodel, you'll want to make sure the areas you're spending your money on are the areas that will get you the best return. Going all out on crown molding in the family room or designing and installing a super fancy fireplace structure may be elegant, but it isn't likely to add much value to the property, both from an appraiser's standpoint or a renter's. Knowing where to put the bulk of your budget is an important part to rehabbing like a pro, and learning these common strategies should help you get there. As a general rule, kitchens and bathrooms are the two areas where you are likely to get the most out of the money you invest in them, as mentioned before. Both appraisers and renters are going to give the most value to the kitchen and bathrooms, especially the master bathroom. Knowing this, we want to put the bulk of our effort, energy, and money into these two key areas as effectively as we can. If you can learn to remodel a kitchen and a bathroom, you are on your way to being able to handle an entire rehab. I've already mentioned several upgrade hacks you can accomplish pretty easily in the kitchen. There are a few more ways you can learn to save money and add value on a rehab as well. For example, you can save on remodeling your kitchen by painting kitchen cabinets rather than replacing them. Many investors make the mistake of assuming they need to replace cabinets in every property they buy. This isn't true. I rarely ever replace them, and in the majority of fixer-upper properties I buy, I paint them. Paint makes a big, big difference in the appearance of your cabinets. Even though it's just paint, I can't state enough how much it can bring to life ugly, worn, or outdated cabinets. There are many different colors to choose from, and painting your cabinets gives you the ability to match them to the other upgrades you put in the kitchen. If you really want a killer finish, spend $60 and add new, clean, fresh-looking hardware to them. They are easy to install and inexpensive, adding value at little cost to you. In most modern-day kitchens, people are opting for either very dark cabinets or white or light gray cabinets. I've found that it's one extreme or the other. You want to avoid the old brown oak style And if you have those types already in there, stain them a darker color. Contractors usually aren't huge fans of painting cabinets as it's a time and labor-intensive process, but if they give you a good price on the bid, I'd highly recommend the update. Another area to consider in your kitchen is tiling the floor instead of putting laminate or linoleum. The kitchen floor is going to take a beating, and it will get worn or damaged faster than anywhere in the house, and a material like tile will be more durable and take the punishment. Also, the majority of the kitchens you are buying in a fixer-upper property are not huge, luxurious, magazine-spread kitchens. They are smaller and more efficient. Much like the bathroom floor example we discussed, you can use a more expensive material without paying a ton more for it. An easy way to accomplish this is to use the same tile for your kitchen that you used for your bathrooms. The contractors can pick it up in one trip, or you can have it delivered in one load. If you get a good price for it, you can just order enough to do both parts of the house. Once you find a tile you really like, you'll probably start ordering the same one for every job. This hack saves you time and effort in that you don't have to go looking for a new tile every time you work a rehab project. Experienced flippers and fixer-upper investors tend to use the same materials over and over on every project. Many of the hacks that work in a kitchen will also work in a bathroom. Just like painting kitchen cabinets, you can paint bathroom cabinets as well. One of my favorite strategies is to ask your contractor how much it will be to paint the kitchen cabinets and negotiate them down to a price you're comfortable with. Once that's accomplished, tell them you'd like to throw the bathroom cabinets in as well for the same price per hour. They can use the same paint, and the same subcontractor can do the work. Easy solution for everybody. Though you can save money on and add value to bathroom remodels by tiling a shower, don't put in a glass shower door. The reason is pretty simple. Glass shower doors are extremely expensive, easy to break, and easy to get moldy. They need to be cleaned frequently, and your tenant often won't do this. Furthermore, they don't do much to improve the aesthetics of your bathroom, at least not for the amount of money you spend on one. Another bathroom remodel strategy is to consider replacing your standard toilets with low-flow toilet and sink options in your rentals. This is an obvious choice when you are paying for the water in your rental. If you own a multi-unit property and the building isn't individually metered, you will likely end up paying for the water, and a low-flow toilet or sink will save you money. Having a unit individually metered for electricity will often cost several thousand dollars, but in many cases, that is an investment that will be recovered in year one. What I'm presenting here is that using low-flow options may be a good idea even if you aren't paying for the water. I put low-flow toilets in all my rentals, and I let the property manager know to advertise my units with this information. For tenants who may really want your rental but are having a hard time justifying the rent you're asking for, let them know how much they're saving on the water bill. And if they're environmentally conscious, they'll see the value in the low-flow features. Remember, most people make monetary decisions based on their emotions and look to logic to rationalize or justify it. By rehabbing a rental to look great, you'll be making them want to live there. By adding in money-saving features like low-flow toilets, you help them justify the cost. This leads to less vacancy time and higher rents for you in the long run. Landscaping tricks. If you're buying fixer-upper properties at a discount, you can pretty much guarantee you'll be doing a good deal of landscaping in the process. If the owner of a home lets the building itself deteriorate to the point of a rehab overhaul, do you think they would have made the effort to take care of the yard? It would make sense to learn some landscaping tricks to save you money while getting your property in rentable condition. When looking at the landscaping budget, I like to break the work down into two categories: cheap labor and skilled labor. I've found that on the majority of my projects, I am either paying someone to do grunt work or paying someone to do skilled work that takes experience and training. The trick is to find a way to get cheap labor to do as much as possible and only use skilled labor when you absolutely must. Cheap labor is best reserved for jobs that may be a lot of work but don't require much skill to accomplish. This would be things like weed pulling, laying sod, laying mulch, hauling things off to the dump, breaking up concrete, planting flowers, etc. Cheap labor is one of your biggest friends as an investor, primarily because you shouldn't be doing work that isn't skilled. The skills you have as an investor, or even someone who has already read this far in the book, put you in an elite level of business acumen. If you're at that level, saving $10 to $12 an hour to pull your own weeds isn't a good use of your time, skills, or resources. Skilled labor is different. Skilled labor is more along the lines of someone who can pour concrete, build retaining walls, install gas lines, install sprinkler lines, etc. We want to avoid skilled labor as much as possible when investing in real estate because skilled labor is expensive. Oftentimes, you are paying someone for a job that requires a license, extensive training, years of experience, or all three. The trick to getting landscaping done for cheap is to use cheap labor to accomplish as much of the project as humanly possible and use skilled labor to finish up what cheap labor couldn't do. By taking advantage of low wages for low-skill work, you get more bang for your buck. The truth is, if you're buying fixer-upper rental properties, you really shouldn't have a need for skilled labor much anyway. Finding a good, reliable handyman who can do yard work and landscaping to make your properties look presentable on a budget is a huge asset to have. One of my favorite landscaping hacks is to hire cheap labor to rip out the existing problems, weeds, broken up concrete, rocks, etc., and replace them with options that are easy enough for cheap labor to handle. I don't want to rip out weeds and replace them with pavers. I want to rip out weeds and replace them with a border of mulch along the fence line that cheap labor can handle. If I can avoid skilled labor in my project, I can keep my budget down to a minimum. Another trick for backyards is to put a cheap chain link fence in if you have a narrow side yard that isn't being used for much. This creates a cheap dog run, if you allow your tenants to have pets, and gives you an entire feature you can advertise and boast about in your property listings without requiring you to spend a lot of money. By taking advantage of the existing narrow area that wasn't being used much, you can get by with putting a cheap gate up and advertising your unit as having a dog run. When it comes to front yard landscaping, you want to stick to two things. Make sure you don't put in any plants that die easily, and you want to pay cheap labor to keep the bushes, weeds, and front lawn trimmed. Don't make the mistake of buying expensive plants to put in the front yard of the property, because your tenants won't likely take care of them. Instead, find something inexpensive and durable you can plant there. A couple bucks for each plant is more than enough to get the look you want without affecting your bottom line. Miscellaneous common rehab ideas. Flooring is another item you will find yourself commonly replacing in rental properties. For experienced investors, replacing flooring is usually done on every turn, when one tenant moves out and another moves in. Flooring takes a huge beating. It's the only part of the property that is being touched at all times as you walk all over it. It's where everything gets dropped, spilled, and broken. By nature, flooring is going to be one of the items your property needs to replace more than almost anything else. Knowing this to be the case, we want to avoid using materials for flooring that are soft, easily stained, easily damaged, or overly expensive. Sure, you can put in super nice laminate or marble to make the property look great, but your tenants are going to be pretty hard on it. If you were looking to buy a commuter car to handle your massive wear and tear, would you buy a Ferrari? Probably not. You'd buy a Honda Civic or some other durable, efficient, and relatively inexpensive vehicle to get the job done. When it comes to choosing our flooring, we want to find the Civic of floors. In general, you've got four common options: carpet, wood, laminate, or tile. Carpet is the cheapest but least durable. Not ideal. Wood looks the best but is very easily stained, scratched, or destroyed. Also, not ideal. Laminate is a happy medium of durability, aesthetics, and not too expensive. Tile is the most expensive but also the most durable. What I've found is that laminate tends to be the happy medium that works best. It's easy to install, meaning lower fixed labor costs. Very durable. Check with a sales associate to find which brands will be toughest. Easy to clean and hides damage well. As a general rule, I try to put laminate floors in as much of the house as possible, other than areas likely to receive a high level of damage, like kitchens and bathrooms. Carpet can still be a good option, but you want to keep it to low traffic areas like bedrooms. Most people don't do much walking around in their bedroom. Instead, they lay on a bed or sit at a desk. Carpet is vulnerable, but in a bedroom, I may just have it cleaned if it's in good shape when I buy the property. Just note, a bedroom is the only place I will leave carpet in place. If you leave it in any high traffic area, it's going to be worn out, frayed, or stained within a short amount of time. Tile is my favorite option for an area likely to take a beating or be exposed to significant liquid spills. Most of these spills take place in the bathroom or kitchen, so these are areas I lay down tile. As I mentioned when talking about rehab hacks, sometimes it's smart to splurge for the upgraded, really nice tile when you only need it in small quantities. This is often the case with bathrooms and kitchens. So, to sum it up, when reviewing flooring options, your best bet is to shoot for 1. Tile in bathrooms and kitchens. 2. Laminate everywhere else. 3. Carpet in bedrooms if it's already in good shape. A few things to keep in mind. If you leave carpet, you'll probably be replacing it later. If you choose laminate, you'll be using a lot of it, so find something on sale or cheap that is also durable. If you choose tile, only use the expensive options if it's for a small surface area and you don't need to spend much on it. Ceiling fans are another great item you can put in a property to make it more desirable and not break the bank. The trick is to do this only if there's already a light hardwired into the ceiling. If there isn't, it can be extremely expensive to have an electrician run wiring to the required part of the ceiling in order to power the fan. If this is the case, it's probably not worth paying for it. However, if there is already a light in the room, the majority of the work is done for you. In these cases, all you have to do is pay for the fan and the hourly labor rate for the person who will be installing it. The installation should go pretty quickly as the majority of the work is done, and you'll have a new fan for not much more money. This can be a huge selling point if your target market has hot weather. I do this on all my properties because the climate is either hot, muggy, or both where I own. Tenants who know you've taken them into consideration and bought a fan for them are more likely to pay a little more and decide to move in a little quicker. This same principle applies to another idea: installing air conditioning in homes that do not currently have it. Now, I know most of you may be thinking, HVAC is incredibly expensive to install and isn't worth it. You may be right. What I'd like to propose is this. Ask yourself if tenants in the area you are buying would be willing to live in a property without HVAC. And if so, which kind of tenants would be willing to do so? In my experience, the only tenants who are willing to live in homes without air conditioning in the Florida heat are those who have no other option and would move out as soon as they found another unit that does have AC. Understand, it's not as simple as putting a new or used HVAC unit in the property and calling it a day. You'll also need to budget for how much it will cost to run all the ductwork and supporting infrastructure to move the heating and air to the home. And this could be expensive. Here's why I do this anyway. When appraisers value the home, there's a good chance its value increases significantly by having HVAC. This not only helps my ARV, but it also makes it more likely I will get a higher appraisal and therefore can borrow more of the money back from the bank that I spent on the HVAC unit and installation in the first place. If an HVAC and installation costs me $7,000, but it improves my property's value by $10,000, I not only added $3,000 in equity, but I also borrowed back $7,500 of that $10,000 in equity at a 75% LTV. This means I spent $7,000 to get back $7,500, $500 more in my pocket, plus $3,000 in equity. While this will lower my cash flow, anytime you borrow more money, your cash flow goes down, it is still a win on many other fronts. In essence, your property paid for its own HVAC and made itself more valuable. Making moves like this are what black belt investors do. This same principle can be applied to roofs. Many, if not most, of the properties I buy in the South need new roofs. The rain can be hard and constant, and if the previous owners were cash-strapped or unaware, the roofs can be damaged to the point where they are useless and need to be completely replaced. This becomes a significant expense, anywhere between $6,000 and $15,000 to complete. When a property needs a new roof, it usually leads to several results. 1. The property will no longer qualify for a loan, meaning the majority of investors cannot buy it. 2. The roof cannot be financed, meaning the majority of investors need to have enough cash on hand to buy the house, do the rehab, and replace the roof. 3. The investor cannot use their typical skilled handyman to do the work, as installing a new roof is skilled work. 4. The property will not be collecting rent for a longer period of time than normal, since you cannot rent out a house without a roof. 5. The work done will need permits, which complicates the process. I've just spelled out 5 items that make a property needing a new roof more troublesome than investment property that doesn't. Usually, one item is enough to scare away most investors. This is 5. While the novice, white belt investor sees this information and says, "Nope, I'm out, too much hassle and headache," the black belt investor says, "Perfect. This is a great opportunity to solve a big problem." Remember, we make money on real estate investing by solving someone else's problem, whether it's personal, property, or market condition related. This is a big problem, and if you can solve it, you'll receive a big reward. I love buying properties and replacing the roofs. Here's why. I specialize in buying properties that won't qualify for conventional financing and even target them specifically, so this is a hurdle I've already overcome. I use cash to finance every part of my deals, so needing enough cash to replace the roof doesn't scare me. I just budget it into the bid my contractor gives me. I use skilled handymen wherever possible, but they're not the only people I use. I have licensed contractors on my team as well. Issues like roofing, plumbing, foundations, structural, and electrical do not scare me because I have people in place to handle them before I get started. Because I keep healthy money in reserve and plan on taking on mostly big rehab projects anyway, this hurdle doesn't prevent me from jumping over it. Because my contractor handles the permit process, I don't need to waste my time, money, or energy trying to solve this problem. They will. In some areas, a new roof will lower the insurance premium and save me big money over the period of time I own the property. Remember, I use a contractor to handle the entire rehab, and I don't get involved myself. This means when a problem, like a new roof, arises, it is his company's problem to solve, not mine. I just need him to solve that problem within the constraints of my budget, and if he can, he gets the job and can make some money. Because my contractor is also an investor and works primarily with investors, this is not their first rodeo. Do you really think they never had a client who needed a roof before? When I ask for estimates to replace the roof, my contractor usually brings me back two or three and recommends the company he thinks will be best. This takes the stress off me and puts it on them. Why does this work? Because I'm an investor. I don't come up with solutions. I buy properties. What I do is hire people to come up with solutions. I don't need to look at problems, worries, or what-ifs. What I need is to take whatever that problem is, convert it into a number, and plug that number into my deal to make sure it still works out. I need the contractor to solve the problem and give me the number. That's it. Seeing things this way enables me to move forward with confidence where other investors get scared and back out. The more deals I move forward on, the more opportunity I have to succeed and grow my wealth. Learning to see opportunity where others see setbacks is what allows me to grow my wealth in any market, any area, or any property. In hot markets, you don't find good deals. You make good deals. Buying a property that needs a new roof gives you a unique opportunity to make a good deal where no one else could see how. In addition to allowing me to buy properties others won't, there is another couple big reasons to replace a roof entirely during the rehab process. Appraisers know a roof is one of the biggest, most expensive items to replace on a property. Roofs are probably the biggest capital expenditure, CapEx, item you need to factor into any investment property you buy. Capital expenditures are big ticket items you need to budget to replace in your property. If the roof is near the end of its useful life, or completely at the end, as in this example, they will give your property a higher appraised value as they don't need to factor in the cost for you to replace the roof later. This means you may be spending more money, but you're also adding more value to the property. The more expensive a property is, the more value they'll likely give to a new roof. This is great for us because not only have we improved the value of our property and taken care of a huge chunk of CapEx up front, but we've also done it before the property was financed. What does this mean? When we go to refinance it, we will be borrowing back 70 to 75% of the money we spent on the roof. So, if the roof costs $7,500 and made the property worth $7,500 more, we only had to leave $1,875 of the $7,500 we spent for the roof in the property. If the new roof made the property appraise for $10,000 more, we could be recovering $7,500 or 100% of the money we spent on the new roof in the first place. This is why I love Burr. We can spend money to improve a property's value without worrying about losing it in the deal. Once we refinance, we get that money, or a good chunk of that money, back out of the deal to reinvest again. In this example, this helps us in several ways. 1. We added value to our property by replacing the roof. 2. We eliminated future CapEx concerns and costs by addressing them up front. 3. We took care of the problem in the present, meaning there shouldn't be a foreseeable problem in the near future. 4. We likely lowered our insurance costs over the next several years by having a new roof. 5. We received all these benefits without having to dump extra cash in the deal, as the improved value the roof brought likely paid for the roof itself. 6. We bought a great deal and gained lots of equity by taking on a problem that scared our competition. Not a bad return, right? As if that wasn't enough, let me tell you a story of how a bad roof cost me $5,000 on a property I didn't even own, and how it cost the owner of that property much more. How I lost $5,000 because of a bad roof. About 6 months ago, I put 7 properties under contract at the same time. During this period of time, my own real estate agent business was taking off. I had 10 properties in escrow, several clients looking for new homes, was trying to hire assistants to help me keep up with the workload, and was getting ready to launch my first book. Of course, these are all great problems to have, because who wouldn't want all that awesome stuff going on at once? But needless to say, my life was chaotic. I'm not proud to admit it, but during this same time, I majorly screwed up. A house I put under contract slipped through the cracks somehow, and I didn't order inspections before my inspection period expired. Now, I can't say I regret this, as it wouldn't be worth it to lose out on other opportunities to prevent what happened, but I can say I learned from it. When the title company told me I needed to wire some money, I reached out to my agent and asked what they were talking about. She informed me it was a house I had under contract and was legit. When I asked to see the inspection reports, we realized we didn't have any done. This left me with 2 options. 1. Close on the deal and hope the house was in good condition. 2. Spend money to order the reports and close if the house looked good, or back out if it did not. Of course, being the wise investor that I am, I opted for option 2 and ordered the inspection. The results were like a punch to the gut. What I thought was a small roof leak turned out to be a gaping hole covered with tarp. It had been continually raining for 3 weeks, and the entire inside of the property was completely soaked, rotted, and molding. But that's not all. Not only was the floor of the family room, the area under the hole, ruined, that would have only been a couple $1,000s to fix, but the water had been running down from the roof to inside the walls of the house, getting into the framing itself, and rotting out the wooden frame that kept the house standing. The inspector was able to pull out chunks of drywall and realized the entire frame was rotted and needed to be replaced. In essence, the house needed to be torn down and rebuilt from the foundation, all because of a bad roof. I tried to renegotiate with the seller, and the listing agent wouldn't even entertain it. In the end, I lost my $5,000 deposit, which was totally my fault, but saved myself over $100,000 in loss to rebuild that house from the ground up. Not only did this roof cost me my deposit, but imagine what it did to the value of the home. The seller of that home had to eat that entire loss, and now has a property worth virtually nothing. The lesson from this story? Have systems in place so you don't forget when you put a property in contract. But more important, take roof problems seriously. A small leak can completely destroy an entire home. If you own a property that needs the roof replaced, get it done. This can cost you big money that you can't get back unless you refinance. If you've recently financed the home, you may be stuck paying out of your own reserves. If a roof needs replacement, do yourself a favor and get it done before you finance the property, so you can recover your investment and put it back into the next property instead. I addressed this problem so it would never happen again by creating a spreadsheet in Google Drive with each step of due diligence I need conducted on every property. I then shared access to this spreadsheet with the agent helping me on the deal, as well as my assistant. It became my assistant's job to check the spreadsheet and make sure the realtor was doing the items on the list and confirm they were done within the time frame allowed. Now, I don't have to worry about this happening again, and I can keep buying properties with peace of mind. Running your rehab. So far, we've covered upgrade hacks as well as common rehab strategies I've used frequently on projects that have saved me money. Part of being a successful investor is making effective and fiscally prudent decisions with your rehab. But that's not all you need to learn. You also need to learn how to manage that project. Getting a great price on paper doesn't do you any good if the project isn't finished on time, goes over budget, or isn't completed as promised. There are several different ways to run a rehab. Each method varies in the amount of work the investors want to put into the job. Some investors want total control. These people basically assume the role of general contractor and hire subcontractors to perform the individual jobs that need to be done. This would be on the extreme side of the hands-on spectrum. The investor is basically taking on a job and performing the work of one of the members of the core four. At the extreme other end of the hands-on spectrum is where I prefer to be. In this model, the investor does as little as possible and relies on other team members to accomplish the job according to the standards that have been set. In this model, the investor creates systems and leverages other people, like members of the core four, to accomplish the tasks necessary to complete a rehab successfully. I call this the business model. It's when you are running your real estate investing more like a business and less like a job. Each of us needs to determine where on the hands-on spectrum we fit. For those who want more control over the process, less of the information in this book will be beneficial. For those who want to focus on high-dollar, productive activities, the information in this book can be game-changing. In my opinion, an investor's best use of time is finding great talent to help them achieve their goals and find great deals. If you're performing the role of one of the core four, usually either managing your own properties or managing the rehabs, you can't be focusing on the activities that will grow your wealth the fastest. If you're going to have someone else check to make sure work was done on your project correctly, you want to make sure they have some incentive to do a good job. The best way to accomplish this is to find someone whose interests align with yours. This is most likely going to be a member of your core four. Later in this chapter, I'll explain how to choose which member to rely on for which project. For now, we're going to discuss how to use them. How to use a team member to check on the progress of your rehab. Using a team member to check on the progress of another team member, the contractor, is a great way to build multiple layers of security into protecting your project. With this method, you can avoid putting unnecessary time into making multiple trips to the project site and only go when it works for you and your schedule. This method also opens up doors to buy rehab properties in markets that are too far away for you to visit. A great perk! The trick to making this method work is to find someone whose interests align with yours when it comes to the rehab of the property. If you are rehabbing a property to rent out, I recommend you start with the property manager. There are several reasons why the property manager would take an interest in checking on the rehab of your property. The most important being, they want to make sure the work is done right so they don't have to worry about redoing it when the future tenants complain. If your relationship with your PM isn't established yet, consider paying them to check on the work your contractor is doing and making sure it's done right. Paying someone to check on work may seem unwise at first, but consider all the reasons this could help you. It saves you time by focusing on your work and building wealth. It improves your relationship with your PM and gets them more directly involved in your business. Your PM may have a more experienced eye than you. It lets your contractor know to stay on the straight and narrow as other people are monitoring them. When you have members of your core four checking on other members, you add multiple layers of security to your investment business. Having another set of eyes looking over your deals and your projects is not a bad thing, and oftentimes can save your bacon when you missed something. to check up on work, have the PM take pictures and video of the work on their smartphone. This way, you have proof of the status of the project and can make sure things are being done as you intended. With the ease of smartphone use, you can gather information from team members quickly and accurately. In this day and age, most people can operate a smartphone camera. If not, it's easy to teach. Another thing to keep in mind is you should never, ever, ever pay for an entire project up front. There are too many things that can go wrong, and the risk versus reward just doesn't make sense. Paying up front opens you up to all kinds of potential risk. Your contractor could skip town. Someone could steal the money from them. They could quit before the job is finished, etc. And what is the upside? You save a little time by not making a couple more deposits? Not worth it. Money should be wired in draws every time. My favorite method is to send the money in 25% draws and ask them what work they will be doing with each draw. After they have finished the work with the money from the first draw, this is when I send someone to confirm the work was completed. I include the scope of the work that should have been done so my team member knows what to look for, and I have them send me pictures and videos in return. When I confirm the work was completed, I send the next draw. If this is a contractor I don't know well or haven't worked with before, I send another 25%. If it's someone I trust, I send 50%. The important thing is you don't send all of it. Part of my system is to reward the contractor with a bonus if they finish ahead of schedule, and a penalty if they fall behind. How can I assess a penalty if I've already paid them the money? What incentive do they have to get my work done quickly and correctly if they've already been paid? Imagine you are a waiter and you get your tip right away before you've provided any service. Do you think you'll have the same drive to provide the best service possible like you'd have if you were trying to earn that tip? Probably not. Now, you may still have pride, and based on sheer willpower, you would do your best. But my point is, it's hard to do your best when you've already been paid. It's easier to do your best when you haven't been rewarded yet and still have to earn it. Ever wonder why professional athletes give their best effort every game in the last year of their contract? This is why. They are thinking about payday and it motivates them. We do our best when we are striving toward a goal, not when we are trying to maintain a high standard by willpower alone. Brandon Turner's story. As host of the Bigger Pockets podcast, Brandon has often told the story of the time he was ripped off by a contractor in Washington State. Brandon was looking for a contractor to do some work on a property for him